Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You're scared of things that go boom, boom, boom.
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric, and I'm here with Corwin Alexander, represented today by Michael Kester.
Yep.
Since Corwin Alexander can't actually be here. But you know what? The show is for him, of course.
Right.
And that means we're going to do two movies.
Yeah, two movies. We're going to do John Dies at the End, and we're going to do The Man with the Iron Fists.
And there's going to be jokes about spoilers, and actual spoilers.
And then jokes about chapters. With actual chapters embedded in the show's programming.
I don't think there's any chapters in the movies, but one of the movie's titles is, that's the joke, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want The Man with the Iron Fist to have a chapter joke in it, but I just can't. No matter how hard, how convoluted a method I try, I cannot make one. Use the chapters and skip over the spoilers. Skip over any talk of paradoxes or fourth dimensional time constraints. That you just, if you tuned in today to find out if the movie's good or if you should go to your local Blockbuster, we don't fucking know.
Blockbuster's officially closed down. Those jokes aren't funny anymore.
I would. No, I watched the spooky iPad South Park, and Blockbuster is in fact still funny. I can confirm.
Will not be funny.
What is that episode called? A Nightmare on FaceTime, I think is the something like that. That was a great South Park. All South Park is great. Anyways, you could skip over South Park chat and go directly into the movies or skip to the end of the show once you figure out what the fuck chapters are.
But if you skip ahead, you're not going to find out whether or not Double Feature dies at the end.
Thanks. There it is. There's the fucking John Dies at the End joke. Do we have an idea of why these things are going together today?
We kind of paired them together as modern versions. Modern film, you know, I don't know.
You were just going to give me a canned answer.
I was
right
going to give you a canned
You're
answer.
You're going to say these are modern takes on
this classic. Is an example of two movies that you and I really wanted to see that came out recently. And so stick them together. We have our own podcast. Fuck you.
All right. John Dies at the End. I love this movie. That's irrelevant to any conversation that you and I need to have recorded on the internet. Fuck, man. So many this year. So many times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Show up. No idea about John Dies at the End. Turns out it's fucking great.
I saw it kind of right when it came out because I was super excited about it. Just the title makes me excited about it. I love when titles go, I don't know, it's a movie. Right. That's one of my favorite things. I mean, we've talked on the show about how we feel about spoilers and how I feel about spoilers.
Sure.
Even knowing the title or seeing a trailer feels like a bummer because it's a little bit spoiled.
Sure.
So when a movie goes, I don't know, John Dies at the End. That's a trailer. Cool. That's a movie. Done. Great. Now go see it. You'll like it. And then they do stuff like go, Paul Giamatti's attached. Clancy Brown is attached. And you're kind of, I mean, the film is doing exactly what I want when people pitch me a movie. I don't want to know what goes on in the movie. I want to know who's directing. I want to know who you got going into the movie, and I kind of just want to know if you're taking it seriously or if you're just making a complete satire of making a film.
Yeah, and the movies that walk that kind of tightrope, I mean, this reminds me a lot of when we were talking about Drive Angry and that sort of badass problem.
Right.
You go into the movie swinging and you say, this is going to be fucking awesome. Look at our movie. We totally get that we're a movie. And, you know, you're on or off the boat with these things.
Sure.
I think this is becoming a class of movie.
Yeah.
That is just, it's like post-film is the genre of film. It just doesn't give a fuck about its concepts. It's just going to go with whatever, you know, it's uncaged, these kind of movies. They just do whatever they want.
Yeah, it basically takes a bullet list of what you're allowed to do in a movie. And what you're not allowed to do in a movie. And it goes, not allowed, huh? Let's see how many of these we can knock out in an hour and a half.
Well, and that's the beauty. I'm never going to be in a position where I can't stand up really 100% for somebody who just says fuck it to the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Who just says rules, I don't need those. I don't believe in those. And I think this is another, it's a result of watching so many goddamn movies. But we see this over time. Just look at the kind of movies we're covering. We get further and further into the extremes as we watch more films, because we start looking for the things we haven't seen before.
Right.
The, you know, the oddities, the things that are really out there. And when, if you ever approach an art style and you can't understand why the art snobs are talking about a particular type of piece, I think that a lot of it comes from, you know, there was definitely a split on this show where I used to have favorite movies and then movies I thought were interesting and they were the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And now I guess they're still kind of the same thing, but you know what I mean?
Sure.
I have so many movies that I'm not even sure are good,
right?
But they're just doing weird fucking things.
It's kind of, I mean, it's the basis of Double Feature is we come on here and okay, we're going to let y'all in on a little secret. We come on here every week and say that every movie that we do is the best movie. But what we really mean is you should see this movie.
Yeah, sure.
It's not a matter of, is it really better than Citizen Kane, or do we like it more than the latest Rob Zombie or Robert Rodriguez movie? But what it really means is, regardless of its cinematic value as a piece of plot telling or, you know,
sure,
Oscar bait, what we're saying is John Dies at the End is something you need to experience, because regardless of whether or not it's good or bad, it's doing things you haven't seen before.
Well, and isn't that enough?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
that's more than enough. That's
absolutely,
that's the perfect thing is, hey, I've got a bunch of fresh ideas I'm bringing to the party. I have things that you have not seen,
mm-hmm,
in much the style of our show, I guess, and the things that we like. Movies are a 10-in-1 for me. They're a fucking sideshow.
Mm-hmm.
I want to show up and see things that I have not seen before. I
want
to see the oddities. You know, you don't go to a 10-in-1 and go, which of these strange creatures and carnies and oddities of humanity would I like to be my roommate?
Right.
You show up to see the fucking freak show.
Mm-hmm.
And John Dies at the End is the goddamn freak show.
Well, what's the point in John Dies at the End? Where along the scope of the movie, I'm assuming at least within the first 30 minutes, do you kind of go, okay, this is not a movie I've ever even considered could come out? What is the moment you realize that it is diverging from the path that you could have even predicted?
I mean, I think that you look for answers in a movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they mentioned Franz Kafka, and we've talked about the Kafka thing.
Sure.
And that was actually a moment on our show, the introduction of Franz Kafka, that things, strangely, ironically, I suppose, got less weird for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because then there was a name to the weird thing. Where I would have shown up and watched The Trial and watched John Dies at the End and said, things are strange and there's an emergency. Why am I the only one who doesn't get this? Now I realize they're doing it intentionally, and sometimes it's weird for weird's sake,
mm-hmm,
because of the other things it's trying to do.
Right.
I actually think for all the kind of padding we're doing for John Dies at the End, it's not an obscure art film. It's actually pretty accessible.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
If there's anything I feel guilty about, it's actually thinking that John Dies at the End is pretty digestible.
Right. Well, that's the thing is the thing about John Dies at the End is, for every time it kind of goes, wait, you think that looks like your ex-girlfriend because she's got dark hair and blue eyes and she's short, and suddenly you go, okay, I don't know what the hell is going on. For every time that happens, a doorknob turns into a penis and there's ridiculous amount of exposition via voiceover.
Right.
The movie isn't trying to necessarily confuse you as much as it's trying to go, listen, we have to go from point A to point B. And we're going to take this. If you look at Google Maps of this film, you look at the Google Map of John Dies at the End, and you want to start at the beginning of the film and you need to get to the end of the film. And you look at Google Maps and the shortest distance is a single road that goes from, you know, A to B. John Dies at the End goes every other route for an hour and a half to make it there.
Yep.
But it's not trying to lose you in the maze of left and right turns. It's just basically going, hey, come on, we got an hour and a half. Why can't we just make this ride a little bit more fun and take some scenic back roads and maybe end up in a dark alley with Doug Jones in the backseat of the car for a second?
Sure.
Why does every film need to go immediately for the point it's making? Why can't we fucking take the scenic route?
The scenic route allows you to play in a lot of areas that, you know, you don't get to. There's a reason they call it the scenic route, right? I mean, it's a totally different experience. You start this movie with the fucking Theseus paradox.
Yes.
It's just crazy that, you know, we could go anywhere from there.
Mm-hmm.
You get this incredibly, we use the term, a term like self-aware to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
This high cinema, high action, you know, really show off moment to go, yeah, I'm chopping up monsters. I'm a badass. I'm Jack fucking Brooks. Look at me cut up a monster, and this is what I do for a living. And also, what about this axe? And the monster comes in, and then he says this thing. But it is, it's not just pulled out of nothing. I mean, this is a philosophical question that, you know, a class on Plato might consider of... Well, it's really laid out pretty much like he does. You replace the handle. An axe is composed of a handle and a head. You replace the handle, and then later you replace the head. Do you still have the same axe? And it's something that the movie is running a mile a minute, but you could spend a whole movie just kind of pondering about that question.
Sure.
The water that's in a river is replenished on an hour-to-hour basis. Mm-hmm. Is it the same fucking river? We still call it the river. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
When you start looking at the fourth dimensional aspects of John Dies at the End, that's where questions like that, those paradoxical questions, they stay with you longer. I mean, something like the Theseus thing is, it's not just philosophy, that's teleportation.
Right.
That's the modern concept of teleportation.
Mm-hmm.
You go in here and we erase your particles one by one and rebuild them identically over there. Is that still you? Most people would say no, but then we return to the river. And we're thinking about things like that because we're injecting soy sauce into our blood.
Sure.
You know, these are actually concepts that I think are highly relevant to the journey we're taking.
Right. Well, the film has this really, and this is in the writing, this is a brilliant bit of writing where every time the film approaches an insanely heady concept, they have a single line of dialogue that you kind of have to go, okay, that makes sense. I accept it.
Yeah.
Specifically something like after John dies for the first time and he's talking to Dave on the phone and switches over to the bratwurst.
Yeah.
Dave asks him a question. Well, you're dead. Where are you right now? And John responds completely just right off the cuff. When you hear a song on the radio while you're driving, where's the song?
Yeah.
And you go, okay, that's definitely something I can't wrap my head around. Moving on.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is you don't want to sit there with the paradox.
Right.
You don't want to solve the puzzle. It's busy right now.
Yeah.
You don't have time for that. We're bear or no bear again.
Yeah,
you know, it's time to move on. There's other things going on in the world. But also the gags, too, are the same way.
Sure.
You're talking on the bratwurst.
Uh-huh.
You could put the bratwurst down once you realize you don't need it.
Right.
But why would you put it down? It's better when you're talking on a bratwurst. Would anyone be watching the scene and be happier if he put the bratwurst? No.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't want him to put the bratwurst down. It's funny. He's talking on a fucking hot dog.
Mm-hmm.
You just let it go because it's the better of the two options.
I think that a lot of what the movie does is it kind of goes, we want a thing. This has to happen. Now, how do we continue beyond that?
Yeah.
It kind of presents itself with what ends a movie. How do you move the movie after that happens?
Yeah, sure.
What happens when you walk into a room, you see a video of yourself getting shot, and then have to live that moment, but we need Dave in the next scene?
Sure.
Well, we know Dave doesn't die at the end because that's not in the title. So instead, we do a really brilliant set of events where... He takes the soy sauce. Suddenly, he's not in the apartment anymore. Random bit of him in a factory. He says, hey, disappears. You go, I don't even remember what happened. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah.
Suddenly, it goes back to the factory. It turns out it's an ammunition factory. And Dave saying, hey, while he was tripping, turns a bullet into a fly slug. and that's how Dave survives.
Yeah, none of that makes any sense.
None of it makes any sense.
First of all, when did he go back to the...
Exactly.
Okay, let's not even address that. Secondly, a fly in the bullet does not make it bounce off of you. None of it makes sense.
So,
but this is, again, in saying... in disregarding rules, mm-hmm. in saying we don't really care for rules.
Sure.
We're not about rules. We're giving the finger to suspension of disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying suspension of disbelief, that doesn't make movies fun. And actually, this is something you talked about with comic book audiences. I don't even remember what episode that was on, but you were talking about how the comic book audiences, I think it was the specials.
Yeah.
How the modern day comic book audience is fucking ruining movies because they just sit there and go, that's non-canonical. How does that fit in with this thing? How did they get from here to here? Everybody's just looking for mistakes. And John dies at the end for his modern and flashy and internet era, as it is,
mm-hmm.
kind of harkens back to when we went to the fucking movies for adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it puts the middle finger up constantly.
Mm-hmm.
It's going, fuck you, comic book guy. Fuck you, comic book guy. We're not going to explain this. Something, something bratwurst. I don't know. It's like radio frequency.
Right.
Did you see that scene with the fly? Yeah, of course, because of that.
Uh-huh.
It's bouncing. Look, we're already six scenes ahead of you. Mm-hmm. We don't have time for this.
Right.
I also think it gives really great treatment to a lot of ideas, even if it's just invoking them. You know, it's one thing to do all the philosophy stuff, but I kind of wonder, this is a movie that mentions the Baldacci levitation mm-hmm. within a 5-minute span of invoking Cannibal Holocaust.
Right.
I don't think the song's Cannibal Holocaust. It's something else Holocaust, but it's clearly talking about Cannibal Holocaust.
Oh, no, it's Cannibal Holocaust.
Right. I mean, they reference SETI in talking mm-hmm. about the what the thing is hooked up to. I think the whole character of the Jamaican guy is basically that conversation at the party is a tribute to skepticism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's 10 steps ahead in that conversation of every doubt, and the doubts are written in at a level that the writers of this film are either, you know, everybody involved is a big fucking Deepak Chopra fan
mm-hmm.
or they are highly aware of skepticism.
Well, okay, so specifically talking about the Jamaican guy scene, Robert Marley's scene.
Yeah, right.
We get that again. This is a moment where the film is kind of throwing a ton of stuff at you. It's how do you know about the dream? How did that guy know about yeah. the dream? And you're sitting there, sure, your mind sure. is on fire going, okay, this guy must be psychic or something. But before you even get a chance to analyze the possibilities of his psychic powers, he invokes, so how did you know the thunder was coming? And immediately you go, I've had that dream. How did I know the thunder was yeah. coming?
Uh-huh.
As far as self-awareness goes, this is the same director that did Phantasm. We get Angus Scrimm comes back, gets to do a
sure,
little cameo.
Sure.
But it's great. Also the same. It's important, less important for Phantasm, more important for Bubba Hotep.
Yeah.
This is the same guy behind Bubba Hotep.
Yep.
Don Coscarelli has a very strong understanding of what a horror audience will swallow and what a higher level horror audience will swallow as a suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
And I think the entirety of John Dies at the End is him going, am I suspending your disbelief? Or am I just making you think things you didn't think about before?
Sure, sure.
I mean, granted, the biggest suspension of disbelief is this drug makes this happen.
Yeah, right.
But you start getting, when it calls things out, like the Baldacci levitation, and it calls things out like the thesis paradox, you're going, okay, well, this film knows more than me about stuff.
Yeah, right. Well, it's trying to stay ahead of you like
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
You know, before somebody levitates and we're going, oh, is this a gag? Is there actually levitation in this universe?
Is this a David Blaine joke?
Yeah, and they're already citing the fucking technique. And then, you know, basically the Jamaican guy is showing up the guy who is smarter than us
right.
citing the
right.
technique.
Exactly.
It's like are you familiar with the concept of red team?
No.
It's like a debate tactic. I only know about this from Newsroom. I'm going to be really transparent and say there was a Newsroom episode on this, but it's the devil's advocate kind of position.
Mm-hmm.
You use it as a hardening technique. You're going to go forward with a story. So you have sort of a mock debate internally of people who are just gathering evidence counter to the story. Make sure that the case you're presenting is just tough as nails. And that's sort of what John dies at the end. It's using its powers for evil. It's going, it's written as if it's a completely skeptical audience and then someone just kind of trying to be a dick.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh yeah, Balducci levitation. I already know about that. That's wrong. Jamaican guy, thunderclap. Whoop, moving on, next scene. Clancy Brown basically is Deepak Chopra in the movie.
Sure, I mean,
he is our swindle con artist salesman who also, again, I mean, we're basically going at our at the highest level. Oh yeah, I know about those con artists. This guy, not a con artist.
Right.
Unquestioningly goes, yeah, he's in the wrappings of total sham, but he turns out to be this guy who's completely 100% on top of things, only ever presented in the movie when he is being a complete badass.
Right. Sure.
It's the only presentation he's given.
Well, he is the conduit. He is the only human decision. That, I mean, what Doug Jones' character, again, when they go through the ghost wall, through the ghost door with the ghost hand.
Right, right.
Doug Jones' character comes out and you've kind of already gone, okay, well, this guy is, he's a different league.
Right.
But then he goes, I've enlisted the only person from your realm that's worth enlisting.
Right.
And turns out it's Clancy Brown.
Sure.
Kind of go, oh, wow. So he's basically what this film is telling me is that's the best human. That guy wins humanity.
Well, right. But even more important than humanity is the fucking dog who's basically like a person.
Yeah.
I think the line I used previously is my golden retriever, Bud, who's basically like a person, the California mentality of your dog companion. It's just another one of those things. I almost feel like this movie is, I mean this in the best way, but it's my personal hell.
Yeah.
It is somebody who is written to be smarter than me in every single aspect, but, you know, the me with the bizarro mustache.
Right.
This is fucking Neil deGrasse Tyson flicking you in the back of the ear for an hour and a half. That's what you're watching.
Well, it's, and you even get the moment where they travel to the second universe, or I guess it's the third universe, because the first universe is the Ars universe, and then the second universe.
Yeah. Right.
Is the where the space people, the atheists from South Park show up on their little floaty things and they land and they're basically going, we have a legitimate problem.
Yeah.
Unlike everything you faced in this movie, we have a problem. And it seems like you can either save our entire universe or our universe is doomed. And they go, fuck this. I'm not going to deal with this. This is bullshit. Right. And they walk away. And that's
more of this.
That's the moment where you go, dude, what? I thought you. And that is, again, that is the bizarro mustache Eric, because you wouldn't walk away from saving a universe.
Well, these guys are just.
However,
dicks.
They go, yeah, we're beyond saving a universe.
Everybody involved with this project is just going, what's the coolest thing we could do? Now let's do one cooler, but make it dickish. The animation is a perfect, I mean, we're also having fun with it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I say it's dickish, but it's somebody who's affectionately jabbing at you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't show the goriest scene in the movie, but we do animate it. And come on, that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
They go into another universe full of people who look like religious nut jobs, part of a big cult, but they are all topless and they do make an Eyes Wide Shut reference.
Mm-hmm.
And my golden retriever, Bud, is basically like a human being. They do also get us on board with one of the most important commitments right up front, which is practical effects.
Yeah.
So we make sure we get, even from the title sequence, or I mean the meat man reveal, who then talks to Clancy Brown on the phone and explodes.
Yes.
Everything about that scene is just so perfect. I mean, how can you just not love watching this spectacle? You mentioned the penis joke with the door.
Yeah.
I think that's fucking hilarious. Just the idea that this door cannot be opened.
Yep.
Not necessarily because it no longer functions as a door, but because, ew, gross, dude, I'm not touching that penis.
Right.
I mean, these aren't characters that they're necessary. That's a different method, I think, than the Drive Angry method, which is, whoa, Nicolas Cage is a badass. If you don't agree, then you can fucking leave. This movie's like, yeah, our characters are badasses. If you think they're kind of bros and you don't like them, that's okay too.
Yeah. it's like, would you touch a dick?
I don't think you have to endorse the characters to like the movie at all. In fact, I think the movie kind of urges you not to endorse the characters.
Sure.
Or really anybody in this universe all the fucking time. I wanted to talk a little bit about the cracked thing in the book and all that, but people can honestly, they can go on the internet and read all that. And I think the internet is a better place to find out about the internet than our internet.
Yeah.
But Double Sleepy Nap Time came from a book, and there's a sequel to the book. Don Coscarelli found out about the book from an Amazon product email, you might like this if you like this thing, which I think is fucking hilarious. But this kind of came from a cracked article that was later written in a book. In fact, Wong is a pseudonym for this guy who writes for Cracked. And I mention this only because I think this feeds into the larger thing we've seen in the last couple of years of Double Feature. But man, especially year six, where the internet is starting to fuel its own movies.
Mm-hmm.
Internet is almost a genre of movie now.
Sure.
And we usually look at that in terms of, you know, crowdsourcing or really independent, made on my little camera, or, you know, these type of productions.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have the bigger places like College Humor are almost starting to make their own films.
Right.
Cracked is basically making its own movies. And so we're seeing these production houses that are popping up out of nowhere because some writer from some site made a bunch of Reddit jokes and wrote it into a movie and made the villain 4chan. And that's basically a film now. I would estimate that we're going to see more of these. I think that's, that's fair to say. In coming years, there will be, we might be in approaching a sort of internet movie bubble. I think we might be in a good spot for that, which really isn't a terrible transition into The Man with the Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Although it is a much different way for a movie to get made.
Sure.
It's this coming together of a lot of people who are fans of things mm-hmm. and who have ideas about things.
Sure.
Things that definitely defy convention. And in a traditional system, I think they would have said, that's against the rules.
Right.
And now we have,
sure,
we have The Man with the Iron Fist anyways. Fuck you, rules. That's the theme of today's show. Fuck you, rules.
Yeah. The Man with the Iron Fist is really fascinating to me from a production standpoint because in 1994, Quentin Tarantino made Pulp Fiction, okay? And everybody kind of unanimously went, ooh, sweet, I want to suck that guy's dick. That guy's going to make great movies forever.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening with Quentin Tarantino specifically, and I know it's happened with a lot of other filmmakers, but Quentin Tarantino went on to present films and champion these other filmmakers and produce Larry Bishop's one-off weird shit. So it's kind of this interesting trickle-down method of auteurism. Because Quentin Tarantino is essentially the poster child for fuck you, I'm making my movie. There is nobody who bosses Tarantino around.
Sure.
He goes, I'm making a really, really potentially racist movie about slavery. And everybody goes, that sounds amazing.
Great, here's money.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tarantino is the highest level example of artistic credibility in his own right, whether you agree with the pieces he's made or not, to Hollywood blockbuster.
Right.
I don't think you get anybody making more of his own insane movies.
Sure.
With such a low barrier of basically people will hand him piles of money to do it.
Sure.
They get out of his way, which is awesome.
Well, and what Quentin Tarantino has then done with this freedom, and this is probably one of the most unsung things about Quentin Tarantino, is he goes, okay, well, listen, the reason I'm so popular is because I had a vision and nobody got in my way. So what if I take these other filmmakers and I go, well, what happens if that Cabin Fever guy gets to make exactly the movie he wants to make? What happens then? Does that, because Cabin Fever was good, but I'm sure he was obstructed in some way.
Sure.
What if I throw millions of dollars at him and he makes a movie called Hostel?
Yeah.
Suddenly Eli Roth is on the map. Yep. Eli Roth is a big fucking deal. Nobody gave a shit about Cabin Fever, but Hostel was a big fucking deal because it was so dark and so violent. It was the beginning of horror porn. He created his own notorious genre.
Sure.
So Eli Roth, yeah, big fucking guy now in Hollywood. Now, Eli Roth goes, well, what made me popular? Well, I guess the fact that I could do whatever I fucking wanted. So I've got these millions of dollars, and I know the RZA from Wu-Tang Clan has been talking to me at parties about doing this kung fu movie. I love Kung Fu. I love the Wu-Tang Clan. If I give him millions of dollars to make exactly the film he wants? And that's how you get Hell Ride, and that's how you get The Man with the Iron Fist, and that's how you get The Spirit. You get filmmakers who love film going, do your own movie. I want to see your vision.
Yeah, right.
That's where The Lords of Salem came from. That's where all of these really interesting films are all coming out of, are filmmakers paying filmmakers to be completely independent auteurs. And that's what The Man with the Iron Fist represents to me, is this trickle down of massive filmmakers picking other filmmakers, letting them do everything they want, and they basically go, okay, let's see if you're even worth shit.
Yeah, right.
They're willing to lose. This is, think of it as Eli Roth personally funding the Kickstarter for The Man with the Iron Fist.
Right. Well, that's really what it is. I mean, they still have to go through this movie so famously too. You mentioned all the way back in 94, Pulp Fiction.
Uh-huh.
But I think a lot of the inspiration from this came from after RZA had worked on some stuff for Kill Bill.
Sure.
And, you know, working with Tarantino and really getting involved as his involvement with the movie industry was kind of coming about.
Mm-hmm.
And then meeting Eli Roth and their stuff taking off. But many years this thing spent in production while people rewrote the script and fucking sanded off the sharp edges and made everything dull and boring. Mm-hmm. And they had to keep going, okay, well, fuck it. Let's, you know, let's write this movie the way we want to write it for the 10th goddamn time and try and get somebody who will put it out.
Mm-hmm.
Without this old Hollywood system, you know, turning in notes and telling you, don't do it this way, don't do it that way. You have to, I mean, look at the fucking makeup of this movie. First of all, can we just say Kung Fu film narrated by black guy?
Yeah.
That alone, sure. I think, is enough to make the studios just quiver with fear. Oh my God, could this possibly work? You know, it's not something that's been done before.
Mm-hmm.
Is one type of audience going to like the film, you know, of another type of, this is RZA basically sitting in an armchair going, yeah, I like watching Kung Fu.
Uh-huh.
I want to be in my own Kung Fu movie.
Mm-hmm.
I want to narrate a Kung Fu movie. And then blending all of these other styles too, which seems like the type of thing a studio would want to sand off, but is actually, I think, the greatest strength.
Sure.
Of the man. It's almost the thesis of The Man with the Iron Fist.
Mm-hmm.
It's, if you were to elevator pitch this movie, beyond the plot of it, you're going to say this is a movie that combines all of these crazy styles,
sure,
and feeds them to you, you know, rapid fire.
Right.
Whether it's the martial arts styles or just the decor, it centers around all these clans.
Mm-hmm.
Each clan has a different style. You know, they fight different and they talk different. They have a different, they have like the ex-Japan 80s hair, mm-hmm, lion thing going on. And the couple, Gemini,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Who fight in this sort of intertwined, I mean, that whole scene, it's choreography,
right,
it's ballet,
sure,
completely different numbers, and they're happening every couple minutes.
Right.
Nothing stays consistent in this movie. It just keeps changing.
Yeah. Well, the film is so forward. It's a very, it moves at a pace similar to John Dies at the End, but differently in style, because the film is going, now this happened, now this happened, now this happened, now this happened. Are you paying attention? Because there's just so many different characters and there's so many different moving parts that all have to culminate at the very end here. And it's so deeply rooted in exploitation. You get characters named Jackknife.
Yeah, right.
Characters named Brass Body. I mean, this is the Robert Rodriguez naming scheme.
Sure.
What's the thing with that guy? Oh, Brass Body.
Yeah.
The plot of the film is so secondary to the stylized choreography and each character kind of getting their moment to illustrate who they are in this puzzle. The plot, I mean, can be the shorthand of the plot is
gold.
Guy wants to leave town. Yeah. Guy wants to leave town. Gang takes over town. Everybody wants the gold. Everybody fights.
Yeah, sure.
But what the film then follows up with is going, each character has to reveal their true nature one at a time. You're going to see what they're all about. And the characters that you thought were the bad guys might be the good guys. The characters that thought they were the bad guys might have a soft spot. the characters that you thought maybe weren't all bad are going to get so much worse.
Yeah.
And the characters you didn't know existed are going to pull their hood off like it matters.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah, that would have been a moment if we were watching the films together that I pause and look over at you and go, who the fuck is that? What was that reveal about? Well, and also I think the theme of uniting against a common enemy
sure.
is a big part of, to look at the movie thematically or look at it plot-wise, it's, yeah, these seven clans and they're all at war and they're all for gold and blah, blah, blah. But what you really see in the end is it keeps coming down to, it's like some perverse game of Monopoly where you all attack the guy who's winning.
Mm-hmm.
And that starts to become, especially when you get the introduction of all the Black Widow stuff.
Right.
And women as a oppressed minority. And mm-hmm. now is finally their time to stop. What did she say? Living in shame or
yeah.
something to throw off their servitude and basically rule this race supreme. And that's it's a surprising moment too, because it's a clan you kind of didn't know existed. It's just this set piece for the entire movie. And all of a sudden it's this huge force to be reckoned with, except when it comes back to Brass Body, as soon as you get this reveal of, oh my God, fucking secret ninja women. And then they're killing everybody left and right. As soon as they get back to Brass Body, it's already a sort of flaw in the plan. Mm-hmm. You're still, jaw on the floor. Oh my God, they're just totally owning this thing, swooping in right at the end and flaw in the plan.
Well, when you get the reveal of Brass Body the first time, I remember going through my mental Rolodex of how you kill it.
Yeah, right.
Because that's just a thing I have
sure.
from watching slasher films or whatever. And it dawned on me, I don't know how you kill that guy. What do? You throw him in the water?
I was thinking the same thing.
You throw him in the water, you melt him, or you wait for him to get old or something. If he gets old, you can't do it. And I mean, the way that you kill him ends up being, you just really got to want it.
Yeah.
You need iron fists. That's how you kill this guy.
I don't know, chi or something is the answer.
Right.
Well, I mean, come on, perfect antagonist, right?
This sure. is,
you're talking exploitation style.
Mm-hmm.
Who fights the man with the iron fists?
The guy with the brass body.
Yeah, you got it. But the idea of those clans, I mean, that's, it's even the credits are broken down by clans.
Mm-hmm.
It's this underpinned structure of the whole movie. I think for as much as we're moving from one style to another, though, and we're doing the combination of rap and kung fu, which is also at the highest level a big piece of the pitch of this movie, it's really faithful. It has this great understanding and representation of kung fu films.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel, except for being a little stylized and, barring a couple of shots that Tarantino has borrowed previously, it doesn't look terribly unlike other kung fu movies.
Right.
And not just in the way it's shot, but I mean, you think back to something we did like Hero, and I remember we talked a lot about seasons and color themes. It fits very well with this, not only the idea of clans, certainly, but also the gold, silver, bronze, how much is owed to color.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, this constant introduction of new things, these don't just become gimmicks, but they feed into not always color motifs, but just, animal clans.
Right.
Wolves, sure. lions.
Hyenas, fish.
Bird men. Or whatever's, happening over there. Chinese Russell Crowe, also his own clan, I guess.
Chinese Russell Crowe is one of my favorite. It's one of those things that, now we talked about,
I can't believe it's happening as it's happening.
We talked about the beginnings of John Dies at the End, where they go, oh no, Don Coscarelli, that guy. And we got Clancy Brown and we got Paul Giamatti. And now you're on board. With The Man with the Iron Fist, it's going the RZA and Eli Roth and Kung Fu and hip hop. And I'm all like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then it says, and Russell Crowe's there. And I go, why though? What about, isn't he?
Yep.
I mean, nothing against Russell Crowe, but when I think of Russell Crowe, I think of two things. I think somebody who's, or thought, let me say thought. I thought somebody who's too hot shit to do an exploitation movie and fighting around the world. Those are the
right,
two things
right.
I think
Thank of. You. I also think of those two things. Well, it was sitting next to Pam Grier. I mean, not really, but
sure.
Pam Grier, I get in this movie.
Sure. It's what
Who,
it is.
Who, by the way, 65 or whatever when she made this, still making films. Like, what a fucking exploitation star.
Right.
Such a career behind that woman. And then I see Russell Crowe, and yeah, I get where you don't think those things necessarily line up.
But he nails it. I mean, he gets drunk. He starts womanizing. He's got his goofy knife. He cuts the fat guy in half, and we got ourselves a character.
Anytime I see Russell Crowe in a movie and he's not just beating people with his fist, I'm surprised and delighted by him.
Sure.
And I actually think the South Park caricature of Russell Crowe might have helped him a lot in that way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you think about A Beautiful Mind, and actually a lot of Russell Crowe movies are about an emotional dynamic. They're not about Russell Crowe beating the tar out of somebody. But because I have that idea, just because it's funny to me, I like to believe that narrative. Then I see him in this, and he's kind of a geek.
You know what I mean?
He's just all the weird anal bead scenes and in the bathtub. And I'm just like, Russell Crowe, you foolish man. And so that Russell Crowe is funny. But then also, if you remember Russell Crowe from LA Confidential,
right?
Every time he walks in a room, he breaks a chair, and that's funny too.
Yeah.
So I think I enjoy, as much as I don't want to, I totally enjoy all Russell Crowe all the fucking time.
I think I am too. Yeah.
Whether he's being a caricature of how we think of Russell Crowe or defying our expectations, both are pleasant surprises.
And when everything boils down, this film does something that it's scary how well they pull it off. The film goes ultimate showdown, main guy that you've been following the whole time, been wronged by the villain, goes head to head with the villain, and where? In a mirror room. Ballsy. The quintessential kung fu movie of all time. The origin of Petting the White Cat, Eric.
Yeah.
Ends with Bruce Lee.
Sure.
Fighting the villain in a hall of mirrors.
Right, right.
To be RZA and go, and then I'm going to be Bruce Lee. And we're going to enter the dragon this shit.
Yeah. Well, RZA is, I can't help but watch this and go, he's playing pretend a little bit.
Sure.
You have to think about RZA. It's the same way I watch the Riddick movies and I go, oh yeah, Vin Diesel's, working on this movie where he gets to be a big sci-fi star. And I don't know. My entire enjoyment of that is watching Vin Diesel have fun. And it almost seems condescending to go, oh, RZA thinks he's like Bruce Lee. But that's kind of the feeling I have.
Sure.
He's going, fuck this. I got a bunch of money. I can make my own goddamn movie and I'll be a kung fu star and I'll show all of you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I'm into that.
I think I'm totally into that. It's just such...
What better way to spend the fortune you've made than create your own movie to be the star in and to narrate and to, redo these scenes that you've watched at home in your expensive home theater setup for years. Now you're like, fuck it. I'm writing in a mirror scene. I'm going to be Bruce Lee. That's great. Film's a perfect vehicle for that. I'll watch other people play pretend. I think that's awesome.
Absolutely.
The website is doublefeatureshow.com and the email address is doublefeatureshow@gmail.com. All right. I'm going to put you on the spot. You know the producers?
I'm starting to memorize them. I know we got...
You've only done this, 45 times in a row.
Today's producer, today's show was brought to you by Meta Somerville, Maxwell Harley, Hannah Hughes, and...
Flint Ironstag.
Flint Ironstag, that's the other one.
Well, we're mixing it up. We just decided to put Flint last because that's the order you forgot them in. What the fuck does a producer do? We have some more movies on the show next time.
Oh, yeah, we totally do. We're going to do something new to Double Feature. We're going to do a John Carpenter film, and we're also going to do a Dario Argento film for a change.
I think this is supposed to be where I shout, wait, come back. That's typically what goes here. There's a bunch of really great ties on this one.
Sure.
We're going to do some, I'll make up for the absence of theme, which turned out to be Fuck You Rules, if you chaptered over. Fuck You Rules was the theme.
Uh-huh.
But we got some revelation via backstory in some ways we are backstoring more than you've ever backstoried before.
Uh-huh.
We definitely have some outcast films of famous horror legends.
There you go.
Which I'll say this time, because next time I'm going to pretend they're perfect films that have no problems and are incredible. And what are they
going to
be?
We're going to do The Ghosts of Mars, and we're going to do Giallo.
And they're going to be perfect, Michael. They're going to be perfect.
Yeah, and turns out if you chaptered or if you didn't, double feature, didn't die at the end. Watch more fucking film.
Spoilers. Bye.